Hi, how y'all doing? It's me, former President of the United States, William Jefferson Clinton. Seeing as the events of this film you about to hear discussed occurred during the time frame of my presidency, I wanted to take the opportunity to set the record straight on how my administration would have handled this highly sensitive and charged situation in reality. So let me be clear, fuck them troops. I mean, fuck those guys. You know what I'm saying?
I hit the big red button on your cold open. I'm so sorry.
Hey, don't worry about it. More important thing here is, where's the after party? Where are y'all going to be after this? Hit me up.
I'm going to bed after this.
Don't tell Hillary I'm here. Hillary don't got to know.
Hello and welcome to another episode of Kill James Bond. I am November Kelly. I am joined, as always, by my friends Abigail Thorne and Devon.
Hey.
How you doing?
And most of all, by former President of the United States of America, Bill Clinton, being played here.
I can't believe we got him.
Yeah, being played here by KD, operator of the Twitter account War Takes and friend of the show. KD, how's it going?
I watched this film.
Mm-hmm. So well, then.
Yeah, we brought you back on from A Few Good Men, because I thought it has been a hot minute since we've seen a military courtroom drama. And this is the thing.
We wanted to do A Few Good Men to some worse men.
Exactly.
No good men.
A few rubbish men, actually.
Well, why watch A Few Good Men if it was given a funectomy?
Yeah, exactly. What if A Few Good Men, right? The ways in which it says lawyers are like also troops, and the troops have to be, you know, kind of like respectful, and going to court is kind of like going to war. What if it took all of that and we had a kind of like right-wing grievance movie that's like, no, fuck you. What if the troops did nothing wrong ever? But I do want to say, by way of apology, that you have now been boxed in here. Like, in the same way as like
Tom and Demi.
Anytime Trash Future happens and we get like, we get Nish on to talk about politicians' books, and the same time, as in the same way that we get Tom and Demi on to talk about Spy Kids, you're the military courtroom movie correspondent now, and I'm so sorry.
So. Yep,
this is fine. You know, I accept this circumstance for the time being, and revenge will be executed at a time and place of my choosing that it will not be revealed for national security reasons.
Yeah.
Beautiful.
You think you're okay with it now? Wait until we get you back on to see Heart's War with Colin Farrell and Bruce Willis.
God.
Honestly, I feel like that's going to be a better movie than this.
Yeah.
So the thing is, like, I completely got this movie wrong because I really enjoyed it until the last 5 minutes.
Right.
Because I completely misunderstood what it was doing.
Oh, we'll get into this.
Well, it's very confused with itself for a while. It goes back and forth about what it wants to be, and then it firmly lands on exactly what November described it as.
Yeah, yeah. We have a sort of like theory about this that we'll get into. But the movie is Rules of Engagement, which is a 2000 movie. It's pre-9/11, if you can believe it, which is weird for how reactionary it is.
It has strongly post-9/11 vibes for a pre-9/11 movie.
Yeah, very like ahead of the curve. What did they know when they were making this movie?
One of the earliest movies that's been about 9/11.
It's true, Yeah, it's like this, some like Soviet-Afghan war movies. You know, it's not a long list. But so we begin in Vietnam. And I have to apologize, by the way. I don't have drops for this one because I thought I was going to be recording on location from Dome. And then due to some like scheduling conflicts, you know, Abby's in California. I was going to be in an undisclosed secure location.
Extremely secure.
Yeah, I was going to be so fucking secure in the undisclosed location, you know?
That's a shame.
I know.
I am broadcasting from Los Angeles, from Hollywood right now, in fact. It's good shit.
Tinseltown!
Yeah, baby!
I don't have drops from this movie. What I do have are drops from other movies, and I feel like The Wind and the Lion covers most of what's going to be what we're going to talk about in this movie. So just in case, you know, I've got Sean Connery saying
Islam,
and that's going to prop up here and there.
Islam.
But first, though,
how could we possibly talk about Islam when we start in Vietnam?
Mm.
Vietnam. it was one of America's wars. And since this is from a story written by Jim Webb, the U.S. senator who was a Marine in Vietnam.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, you better believe they're doing the right thing.
That explains a lot, actually.
Yes.
Yeah, story written by Jim Webb, adapted for a screenplay by Stephen Gagan, who I probably mispronounced his name, who also, I believe, wrote one of your favorite films in the show, Syriana.
I loved Syriana.
Yes, yeah. Oh. This is the guy who wrote Syriana, and there's a real gulf between these two things, and I think we're going to try and reconcile that later on.
There's a real Gulf War.
Yeah. So Samuel L. Jackson and Tommy Lee Jones are Marine lieutenants in Vietnam. They have not figured out de-aging technology yet. So
they just look real old.
They just try to show you Tommy Lee Jones as little as possible.
They've kind of got Samuel L. Jackson in a kind of like skincare routine to make him look younger. Mm. They've kind of like smeared some Vaseline on the lens to convey that this is the past, and it doesn't really work.
Yeah, TLJ and SLJ are north of the DMZ, fighting the VC, trying not to get KIA.
Yeah, and they're just sort of like, I have described it here as ambling about a fairly jungulous landscape, which is nothing.
Yes. Jungulous is a great word. Jungulous
yeah, it's one good. That I made up for this.
I like it.
Yeah, and what they're doing is like the classic task of infantry, which is like, you know, mooching about, right?
Wandering around.
Yeah. There's, you know,
saying shit like Charlie Echo, things like this.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Between the music and the environment, there's some real "we have Snake Eater at home" energy going on here.
I also like that they kind of like bunch up really closely together so that they can all fit in one shot, which I always appreciate.
There's such dipshit energy going on here, especially Tommy Lee Jones's character. It looks like he's trying to find his car in the mall parking lot and he's lost.
He's looking for his keys in Vietnam. So yeah.
Does his park somewhere in Vietnam? I did go. Oh, damn.
If I don't have air tags yet.
There's just like a sort of 70s model Oldsmobile parked in the middle of the like iron triangle with like.
Shit. He's just like,
oh, it's somewhere.
Listen up, platoon. I've lost my Oldsmobile. We're going to split up and see if we can find it.
And they do split up and they toss a coin to suggest like which one of them goes where. And Tommy Lee Jones takes his platoon of five guys. They walk down a river and Samuel L. Jackson's platoon gets ambushed. They get shot at and they demonstrate the best possible response to getting shot at. One which the U.S. Marine Corps in this movie does not iterate on at all. If someone starts shooting at you, you just kind of sit there, you know, and you look around, you go, like, wow, that's crazy. You know,
God, I hope this doesn't hit me. Anyway,
well, so Tommy Lee Jones's squad get ambushed, but Samuel L. Jackson's squad like see the other half of the Viet Cong forces, and they actually attack them first.
Yeah,
and Samuel L. Jackson's boys, they manage to overcome the Viet Cong position, and they take a couple of prisoners, including an officer and his radio operator. Samuel L. Jackson at this point calls them racial slurs.
Yes, he does.
And they won't talk to him. They won't give him any information.
Mm-hmm. And so Samuel L. Jackson negotiates in the form of, if you do not call off this ambush of Tommy Lee Jones, I'm going to shoot your radio operator. And the officer like stares him down. Samuel L. Jackson shoots his radio operator.
Executes him point blank range. The man is unarmed.
Big klaxon. War crime number one.
Yes.
You know?
Time to first war crime, 6 minutes and 50 seconds.
Literally.
Murder?
Also, when he shoots him, I'm almost certain that his M1911A1 makes an M1 Garand ejection ping.
Just to like, bing!
Embarrassing.
Yeah, I'm almost certain. I went back and watched it like three times. I'm almost certain.
That's the like CinemaSins ding that happens when you do a war crime in your own conscience, you know?
Meanwhile, Tommy Lee Jones has been wounded. Him and his boys are getting the shit shot out of him. But eventually, this Vietnamese officer does comply and he calls off his boys. And Tommy Lee Jones is the only survivor.
Saving one
curious
life.
Thing, in the course of doing this, Samuel L. Jackson is like, if you call them off after I've like shot this guy in front of you,
I'm going to let you go. No cap.
Exactly. Like, you could just leave. On my like word of honor as a Marine officer.
As a man who's just committed a war crime.
Yeah, despite the fact that you're a witness to me committing a war crime. You can just run. You just go. It's fine. I don't give a shit, you know?
I will let you go if you promise not to come back later in the movie.
Yeah, exactly. Which he does. They rescue Tommy Lee Jones from this river where all of his men have been slaughtered.
An interesting thing happens here, which is that when the US soldiers get shot, They get some slightly strangely edited, because it's the 2000s, slow-mo close-up deaths, but the Vietnamese soldiers do not.
Yep. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Kind of privilege of who gets to be seen to suffer in these things. Mm-hmm.
And the movie will go back and forth on this in interesting ways that set up a promise the movie just completely reneges on.
Absolutely.
Oi, that's enough of that. You have to go to patreon.com/killjamesbond and sign up today for £5 a fucking month. You have to do that if you want to listen to the rest of the episode. I literally do make these rules, but my hands are tied here. So, sorry.